Let's Face the Issues is a daily broadcast ministry of First Conservative Baptist Church with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Dr. Youngblood is also the founder, president of Conservative Theological University. Let's Face the Issues broadcast deals with real issues facing our culture today from a biblical perspective. God created three institutions, the home, government, and the church. Therefore, any issue that is harmful or has a negative impact on either of these institutions will be carefully dealt with and confronted from a biblical worldview. Too often, good people are afraid to confront serious issues that are attacking the church, the home, and Christians. We must stand against the enemies of the family and the church. Tune in each day for another broadcast of Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Jean A. Youngblood. Here is Dr. Youngblood with Let's Face the Issues.
Thank you so much, ladies and gentlemen. It's my delight to have you on board with us today as we face the issues. I pray that this is a place on your dial that you stay tuned each day as we face the issues. And let me remind you, as we do, we welcome your input, your questions, your comments, your dialogue and discussion. You can dial 401-1413. That's 401-1413. That gets you directly through to our studios and right to the microphones so that we can have this dialogue and discussion together. We're going to be talking about our election and the election cycle. And I just simply call this broadcast, "We Get What We Vote For." You know, you've heard the old cliche, "You get what you pay for." Well, in the same vein, we get what we vote for. If we vote for those that have no interest in family values and the faith of the community, the future of our community, the future of America, that's what we have to live under. But ladies and gentlemen, before we get into the dialogue and discussion of that, let me remind you to tune in each day, and especially this Thursday, that's day after tomorrow, we're going to be dealing with a subject of Islam and America. Can an Islamic person that is in total submission to Sharia law, can that Islamic person be a faithful American citizen? And most acutely, the question must be, can that person represent us in Washington? We're seeing that with some things that's taking place in Washington today. We'll be dealing with that exclusively on Thursday's broadcast. Put it on your calendar. Do not miss it. If you're going to miss anything else, do not miss that broadcast. But ladies and gentlemen, perhaps it goes without saying that we have to live under, it's our responsibility, we must live under the laws that are enacted by those whom we vote for. Do you realize, ladies and gentlemen, that in Tallahassee, as we speak, it's almost laughable if it weren't so sad. Do you know how many bills have been introduced in Tallahassee in the House and the Senate combined this year, this legislative session? 3,000 new bills. Now, let's just hypothetically say 50% of them never get out of committee, and then 50% of that's ultimately voted upon and approved, and it becomes new laws for the state of Florida. Can you imagine putting another 1,500 new laws on the books in the state of Florida as though we don't have enough now? But the whole point is that I want us to understand, ladies and gentlemen, we vote for people and we put them in office, and then we have to live under the laws that's enacted by them. A good example, ladies and gentlemen, is Representative Omar. She's elected from one of the districts in Minnesota. She is an Islamic. She hates Jews. She hates American government and jurisprudence system. She is against our constitutional republic. Omar has made constant headlines and made news daily because of her stand against Israel. Omar is the in fact, Omar wants to eradicate. She is for the total eradication of the Jewish state. Now, she hasn't said that in her words openly, but that's her background. In fact, those that have followed anything and looked at her Facebook and her Twitter prior to a lot of it being washed away, removed, she is for the total eradication of the Jewish state. She's for the eradication of Jewish people. This should not come as any surprise that she is a Muslim that believes in Sharia law. And based on the Quran, better known as Sharia law, Omar cannot be a good American citizen, much less an American political figure. But the people in her district, listen, the people in her district voted for her. That's the point that I want us to understand today, ladies and gentlemen, is the urgency of voting for the right candidate for office. The urgency to recognize that the candidate we put in office, then we're going to have to live with their decisions over us, because we've gotten far beyond the point where it is the government of the people, for the people, and by the people. The people many times are scammed into believing a lie and putting someone in office. If you've been getting your mailbox filled with political campaign material, you understand what I'm saying. I've been in Jacksonville over 40 years, and I don't believe I've seen a campaign, citywide campaign, as downright dirty as this particular campaign has been. The absolutely brandishing of filth and garbage and the accusation of the opposing candidates. And I know for a fact, because I have the privilege of following the issues pretty closely, and I'm pretty familiar with each of our candidates in our citywide election. And just as with Omar in Minnesota, the Jewish people in her district right now are fearful. In fact, one was interviewed on Fox News this morning. They're fearful. They're fearing for their lives because of Omar's high-profile, highly publicized Jewish hate. But they didn't realize that, apparently, or they were asleep at the wheel and didn't vote. If you're listening today, ladies and gentlemen, you're registered voters. There's no excuse to sit back and let this election cycle pass without you voting. I'm told just recently that we have some low percentage, 5-7% of the voters that have turned out for early voting in the election process. Well, number one, I'm against early voting. I'm against the early ballots, as is done. It's designed simply to sway the thinkers and the movers and shakers in the election process. I'd like to have just one big day for election. I enjoy voting on election day. I don't care if it's sunshine or rain. I enjoy voting on election day to meet people, to greet people. I'd love to see us have it as a holiday on a statewide basis and a citywide basis for the election cycles, so that everybody can be off. The bosses, the companies can say, okay, you get paid for today, you're off. We're going to vote. It's the patriotic day. We're going to vote. But ladies and gentlemen, this is why it's so important for us to elect candidates in our city election. Candidates that are standing for faith and family and for the future of our city. Candidates that will recognize the issues. Candidates that are men of God that will honor God in this citywide election. Perhaps you've already voted. If you have, then perhaps you voted without full understanding. I don't know. Perhaps you did major research. Perhaps you're seeking, though, additional information. This is the purpose of this broadcast today in facing the issue of the election cycle. We have candidates today that's running that ought not to be in the race, but they are. And yet we have some today that are highly qualified that yet is not part of the good old boys club. And as a result of that, they're not being recognized publicly and officially as some of the others. Our city is now facing with many, many issues. Let me just go down the list of some of the issues that our city is faced with. Then I'm going to introduce to you today our special guest, Don Redmond. Don is running for Group 4 at large, citywide, ladies and gentlemen. His election is on a citywide basis. If you're listening and you're a registered voter, you can vote for Don Redmond. He is in Group 4 at large. That means across the city, you can vote for Don Redmond, Group 4, City Council at large. But in a minute, we'll introduce Don and give him an opportunity to talk. What I want to do, first of all, is set the stage with what I view as some of the major issues that we're faced with in the city of Jacksonville. And this election will determine what we do as a city with these issues. Let me just, without elaboration, go down my list of what I feel are the major issues that's facing our city. The crime wave. We have over 30 gangs, according to the sheriff, over 30 gangs marauding across our city. What are we going to do with the crime wave and the gang problem in our city? Number two, we have a push by some of our elected leaders to restrict our Second Amendment rights, the right to keep and bear arms. That's a national phenomenon. It's a statewide phenomenon, and it's a phenomenon that's taking place here in our city. We have some of our present city council members, if reelected, will still continue to push to take away your right and my right to keep and bear arms. And the Second Amendment says it's not to be infringed upon. Thirdly, how do we handle the sunshine violations by elected leaders? We'll talk about that further in the broadcast. We've got sunshine laws. We've got an ethics commission that's to enforce the sunshine laws. But what do you do if the ethics commission has been defanged and can't do anything in that realm? Number four, the debate over the possible sale of JEA. How do you stand, ladies and gentlemen? Do you know enough about it to cast a vote wisely as to the candidate that you think would best make the decision for we the people? And number five, the city's Ethics Commission role as a watchdog agency that's to designed and put into place to carry out the laws for the Sunshine Law in the state of Florida. Number six, what do we do with the failed downtown landing? There's a movement now to demolish it and to put a city park there, of all things. That's what we need, another place where the druggies can hang out and sell their pot, or where the homeless people can live and cause all kinds of harm and problems. Yes, I understand that. But what do we do with it? Number seven, should our national heritage monuments be destroyed, as a few council members are pushing to do? Number eight, what about JSO officers? Should we increase the number? Listen, ladies and gentlemen, let me give you this very clearly. We have an 840 square mile city called the city of Jacksonville, 840 square miles. If you take the number of police officers we have on the street at this moment, we have one, that's right, one, O-N-E, one police officer for every 10,000 citizens. That's one officer for every 10,000 citizens. Do you think that is all right? If you've ever been in an accident, large or small, you call law enforcement. Unless somebody's dead or dying, 45 minutes to an hour and 15 minutes is the arrival time. Number nine, should JSO officers, that's Jacksonville Sheriff's Office officers, patrol the schools, or should we continue with the Mickey Mouse School Patrol? Mickey Mouse School Patrol, we'll talk about that later in the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, it's my delight, my pleasure to introduce to you my good friend and city council candidate for citywide group four at large, Don Redman. Don, welcome to Let's Face the Issues.
Thank you, Dr. Youngblood. Thanks for the opportunity of being here.
It is my delight to have you on the air with us. And as I said before the broadcast, this is, if you please, a final opportunity we have today, Don, to let our listeners know what you're about and what you're doing and the need to vote for Don Redman.
I'm very conservative. I served 8 years on the city council and took strong stand on family issues. I fought against the HRO and still am fighting against the HRO. Public safety has been a major project of mine. I serve on the sheriff's watch and I go to meetings with the sheriff's people, officers, every month. So I see the needs out there, and we definitely need more people patrolling our city for the territory that Dr. Youngblood just mentioned. It's not a good percentage.
Don't feel safe that way, do you?
I know. I've called the police twice in the last week and had to wait. Yep. In one case, it was an accident with a dead person. In the accident, and I was not happy with the time that it took rescue or the police to get there. So
the answer to that, though, Don, and you'll agree with me, we have a pretty much eye-to-eye understanding of that. We need more police officers on the street.
No more police officers on the street is the only answer. That's the only way that you're going to be able to get people, get police to where you need them in a decent time.
And there's another caveat to that, Don, if we bound it about for just a moment, because we've got a lot of things to talk about. But now that we're talking about law enforcement or police officers, police officers need to have the right to enforce the law. They need to be released of the handcuffs themselves to be able to enforce the law. We have too many restrictions on when a police officer can fire his weapon. We have too many restrictions on what a police officer can say or do. Just as with the three transsexuals that were murdered, and I'm against murder anytime, any place, so I hope our listeners understand, but if you dress like a woman, act like a woman, and you're out on the street to be picked up by a man, and then there's a discovery that he's made a woeful mistake, and there's death as a result of it, and then when the coroner gets there, and he simply pronounces the death on a male and not a female, then all of a sudden the sodomite community is all upset. And then they want to restrict our police officers, so they have to make sure that they identify the person with the way they are dressed and not their anatomy. And I'm against that. And yet we have a cowering today of many of our police officers because they're fearful that they'll get in trouble by making an error in whether it's a male or female in addressing that person, even in the communication with them. So I'm against that infringement on the responsibility of a police officer in Jacksonville. And as I understand it, there's a lot of police officers today that are pretty offended with that that's being enforced upon them by a law enforcement officer. So we need more law enforcement on the streets. But Don, talk with us, talk with our listeners in relationship to that. What do we do? We have a city council. City council allocates the funds. City council has to approve the budget. Should the city council be proactive and determining we need more funds for the sheriff's office and proactively address that? What do you, how do you, how should we handle the increase of police officers?
Well, it, yes, definitely city council handles the purse for the city. And, they definitely need to propose legislation to get more police officers on the street. Working with the sheriff and seeing just what the needs are out there to handle the job that's before us. I mean, when we're having to pay overtime for policemen to do what police need to do to keep the crime wave down, we shouldn't have to do that. Shouldn't be having to pay police officers overtime, having to work hours and
they work pretty long shifts, as it
long
is.
Shift, long shifts, being long tired. Shift. It's not. That's not getting the job done the way it should be.
In other words, we're taking our present officers and we're spreading them too thin to really be effective and proactive in the handling of the crime in our city. Is that
that's
correct?
That's exactly right. We need to, you know, need more boots on the street to handle the job.
Don, without calling any names, you've got a candidate that opposes you in this election. He's a pretty smooth talker. He's been in the Jacksonville area for quite a few years. He talks about he wants to bring the city together, wants to bring the people together. Yet some of the things he's done in the past with his stand on moral issues is a major divisive thing in our city. Your opposition, Don, stands for special rights, special privileges, special exception for those that have chosen an immoral lifestyle, the sodomite lifestyle. Do you believe that's healthy for our city? How do you stand on that issue?
Well, I'm a Christian. My Bible tells me that that lifestyle is wrong. I follow God's word. I fought against it when I was on the city council before. We defeated it when I was on the city council
before. That's
right. The council that is there now approved legislation to allow a man to go into a woman's bathroom or vice versa. They gave the homosexual community rights that they don't need. They have every right that every other person has out here.
Under the federal constitution, under the state constitution, under the Civil Rights Act, they have the equal rights already.
That's right. And my opponent was down there with this council before the city council asking that this bill be passed. He supports it strongly and and said that he'll fight in whatever way he can to make sure that the homosexual community has whatever they want, basically.
And we're faced with that today. And we're faced with the fact that a small business owner today could have his business taken simply by an act of a homosexual coming in and making a claim, whether it's legitimate or not, that he was maltreated and mistreated, and because of the special exceptions rule for the homosexual lifestyle. By the way, it's not the same as ethnicity. And many of them try to say, well, the same as a ethnic person with a different ethnicity that they're discriminated against. The homosexual lifestyle, ladies and gentlemen, if you're not aware of it, if you've not studied your Bible, it's the only lifestyle that God destroyed two cities as a result of it. It's the only lifestyle that God said he's turned them over to a reprobate mind. It's the only lifestyle that God says is an abomination before him. And yet somehow, some way, we're supposed to embrace that. It's a chosen lifestyle, Don. And yet we have a push in our city, as in many cities across America, to embrace that and to accept that. But what I'm hearing you say is that when elected, you will stand in every opportunity against any special exceptions of that type.
That's for sure. I would definitely stand against it.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the type candidate And I'm saying this from me personally, and I'm prayerful that you'll pray about it and understand it. I'm saying this that from my perspective, as a central Biblicist, as a conservative, as a Christian, as a citizen of faith and family in Duval County, this is the stand, the type stand, that we need to have from our candidates that we vote for and put in office, lest we are in fear of our future as a result of the decisions that's made now. Don, let's look at some other issues when we think about the moral and ethical issues and the social issues. What is your position? I've noticed that we've had major reports lately about the Sunshine Law and the Sunshine violations. Our present city council members, a number of them, had spent hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours on the telephone with other council members in violation of the Sunshine Law. Ladies and gentlemen, if the Sunshine Law says that you need to discuss city business or state or county business in the sunshine, that means openly and not by telephone or not in some clandestine meeting or not by writing it on a piece of paper, giving it to a third party, that third party passing it on to another city council member. And that's what was discovered in the one-year investigation of several of our city council members. Now, our state attorney said that there was not enough evidence to prosecute, but the Ethics Commission wanted to go forward with an investigation and to enact some penalties for those that had done so. Don, speak to that issue. What is the Sunshine Law? What is the training for the candidates and for the elected leaders with the Sunshine Law? And is it possible that any candidate or any elected leader would not be aware of the Sunshine Law?
To serve on the city council or any commission that is involved with the government, any committee, any commission, you have to go through ethics training once a year. Doesn't matter if you went through it last year, you have to go through it every year. So there's no excuse or no reason why an elected official would not understand the ethics laws, and which tell you that you cannot discuss anything that, you know, other than in the sunshine. If you have a meeting, if you want to discuss anything that you might vote on, you have to advertise a meeting and allow people to come and hear what you're going to discuss.
In other words, what you're saying, that meeting must be posted in some high-profile area on
exactly
a billboard,
right,
a bulletin board, or by Twitter or whatever you want to call it today. Yep. It must be posted that you're going to have a meeting.
You have to allow the media or whoever might want to come and attend your meeting and hear what you're going to discuss with another person that might be in that meeting with you. That's the law. That's what, you know, ethics training and puts that out very clearly. They spend a lot of money training each individual that holds an office every year.
But we have an ethics commission, and the ethics commission, headed up by a lady in our city, and she has been, as the article says in the newspaper, ladies and gentlemen, the title of the article says, City's Ethics Watchdog Declawed. It goes further to say, it's hard to find fault with the city decision to set up a commission charged with investigating ethics issues as long as the commission actually has the power to enforce the rules. This is Jacksonville. However, it is so no surprise that the City Hall's Ethics Commission recently found out it really doesn't have the authority to do anything. Well, it is clear, ladies and gentlemen, based on the article and based on what I've discovered, that the Ethics Commission, though they're supposed to be able to refer to prosecution, refer to the state attorney or to the general counsel's office for further investigation and prosecution, they're not allowed to do so. Don, speak to that. Tell me what that does if we've got an Ethics Commission that has no authority, and if we have sunshine laws that have no teeth in them, what does that do for the protection of our city?
Well, it does nothing for the protection of our city. You find out that everybody ends up being puppets for the power brokers in the city of Jacksonville. So, you know, you can do anything and get away with it if you have the influence behind you of the power brokers of Jacksonville.
And if you have no commission that's over you to investigate and or to refer for prosecution, you're free to do whatever you want to do.
Free to do whatever you want to do.
And, is that good for the city of Jacksonville?
No, it's not.
Is that good for the citizens?
Not good for the citizens. Not good for the city of Jacksonville. And it doesn't make for good government for representative. I mean, we're elected to represent
the people.
The people.
Yes.
To serve the people. And you cannot serve them properly if you're making backroom decisions as to what's going to happen, or backroom decisions on how you're going to vote. There's a ton of lobbyists that hang out in City Hall on a regular basis trying to convince people of how they should vote. I mean, to get two elected officials together with a lobbyist and discuss something that, you know, backdoor arrangements, it's not good. It's
Don,
not good.
When you're elected, would you be so bold as to say that you would introduce a resolution to ask for the city council to vote in the approval of the Ethics Commission having authority that it's supposed to have?
I would do that. If we're going to have an Ethics Commission, and we need the Ethics Commission, we need it to have the teeth that it would be able to do its job. And I would put forth some legislation to try to give them the teeth that they need, yes.
All right, because of the brevity of our time, Don, let's move on to a couple of other things that I believe our listeners, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, joining the dialogue, asking Don Redmond a question. We're interviewing Don Redmond. He is city council candidate for Group 4 at large for the city council of Jacksonville. He's a man of faith, a man that is a family man. He is in agreement with the right direction for the future of the city of Jacksonville, what we ought to do. So you can call 401-1413, 904-401-1413. We've got a few minutes left that I would like to have further discussion on a couple of issues, Don, if you would. There's a lot of talk now about the demolishing, or the potential of demolishing, the Landing. Ladies and gentlemen, if you've not been downtown, the Landing is a large interior mall that's been in Jacksonville for some 20, 25 years. And the previous operator of the mall, the Landing, the city had promised a five-story parking garage when he took the responsibility of operating it and running it and paying for it, and they never did fulfill that commitment. The mall became a flop and a failure, and after a recent shooting there and some deaths, all of a sudden everybody's anti-Landing, and so the mayor's determined that he thinks it's best to tear it down, and he is under the impression, based on some power broker's input, that it needs to be a beautiful inner-city park. Don, do you think we need to have another park downtown Jacksonville?
I do not. I mean, we have more parks in Jacksonville than any other city in the state, and we can't maintain the parks that we have. We spend more time on those downtown parks, Hemming Park, the park behind the library where now all the homeless hang out. It's a trash heap there. So we spend more time on the parks downtown maintaining them than any other park, and which takes away from neighborhood parks, takes away from parks out in the areas where people live.
How can we have a viable, thriving commercial downtown if we're going to make everything parks? But let's get to that in just a moment. I believe we've got a call on the line. Go over your question and comment, please.
Good morning, Dr. Youngblood. Thank you for your conservative stand for Christ. I really appreciate it. Could you give us maybe who you think would be good to vote for in the city council election? Obviously, your guest would be someone we want to vote for because he stands up for Christ. Also, could you give us some other folks who you both would basically endorse? Thank you.
Well, if you've got your ballot there, I'd be delighted to let you just go down the list and ask the question. And I'll give you an answer from my perspective.
I'm so sorry, Dr. Youngblood. I'm driving, so.
Okay. I know out in district, I believe it's 14, Henry Mooneyhan. Mm-hmm. Henry is a Christian gentleman that I have recommended. We have Sam Newby that is in group five at large, and Sam is running again, and he's been hammered in two or three ways, and the power brokers have tried to get his attention and to get him to go along with them, and I'm thankful that he's taken a stand. Al Ferrero is another one that's a Christian gentleman that is faith and family and interested and concerned about the future of the city of Jacksonville. We've got several that are good candidates that we need to look at, analyze, pray for, and vote for it so that they can stand up for we the people, especially Christians and families that want to honor the Lord in our city. But I am thankful that you're seeking the answers, and I'm thankful that you're prayerful for that. We got about 2 minutes left. Don, would you speak to some of these issues and say to our listeners today what you'd like to have them to do in voting for you, why they should vote for you, some of the things that you want to summarize your stand in this opportunity to say to our voters, vote for me.
I'm Don Redmond, running for City Council, Group 4 at large. That's a citywide race, so everybody can vote for me in Duval County. And I would wish to restore family values for our city. I take a Christian stand on every issue that comes before City Council. I need help. We have the election coming up Tuesday of next week. I need people to go to the polls where the voting will be taking place and wave a sign for me. If you have time to do that, I'll have signs at every polling spot. Just pull up one of those signs and wave it for 20 minutes, half an hour, or an hour if you have time. So that will help me to get elected. I have, I have a grassroots campaign going. I've worked very hard. I believe in serving the people. I'm a servant of God. I serve in my church. I serve in many ways. So if you could help me in running for and winning in this election, I'm asking for your vote.
Simply put, Don, if I could interrupt for just a moment, I hate to do that, but our listeners need to understand you're not sponsored by the power brokers. You're not funded by the power brokers. It's a grassroots effort, as you said. It's not dependent on your opposition that is I call him a rhino because I've known him for about 40 years, running as a Republican, but he has less than Republican conservative values.
Right.
He has been funded majorly by the Power Brokers Club in this city.
That's right. And in his statement to the Times Union, he says Jacksonville has been cheap and we need to raise taxes. I say we don't need to raise taxes. We've had our taxes raised the last 2 years with property values going up. So there's a lot of issues that I am very conservative about. A lot of issues that I will take a strong stand on and I won't be bought by the power brokers. And so that's, that's why I don't get their support. And I'm not supported by the homosexual community because they don't want me in there and they want him in there. So stand behind me, go to my website, voteforDonRedmond.com, and you can find out much more about me.
Very good. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us today. And go to the polls and vote. Pray, plan, go to the polls and vote. And for Group 4 at large, City Council District Group 4 at large, Don Redmond. Don is for faith and family and for the future of Jacksonville. Thank you so much for joining us today. Looking forward to meeting you on the air even tomorrow as once again we face the issues.
You have been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, located just 1 mile south of I-295. You are invited to worship with them 9:30 a.m. Sunday for Bible study, 10:45 a.m. Sunday morning worship service, 7 p.m. Sunday evening worship service, or 7 p.m. Wednesday fellowship meal Bible study, prayer, Bible Q&A, and updates on issues facing our city, state, and country. Tune in again for another Let's Face the Issues broadcast. Also tune in this same station Saturday mornings at 9 for expository Bible preaching by Dr. Youngblood. Remember, a rebroadcast of this program can be heard every evening, 9 p.m. on AM 1600 and 100.3 FM. Tune in and invite others to listen.